everyone, and welcome to episode number 98 of the PE Geek Podcast. And as always, it's an absolute pleasure to have you here. And I'm joined today by none other than Mark Collard. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Jared. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's a real pleasure to have you here. Now, I was sitting down before the episode, and I was sort of reminiscing and thinking, when was the first time I ever heard of you or saw your name? And I immediately remembered planning a lesson in my university rounds of all times, and it was using the No Props book that you authored, I think, in 1996 or so. Is that right?
The original, the little blue and white monograph?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I remember we had access to the No Props book, and I was sitting there, and I was completing a lesson that utilized some of the games and activities that you had inside of that book, and I directly remember that book having a massive impact on the engagement of the students that I taught that lesson for. So what do you do? Is it just writing books? And, you know, how have you turned this into something that's had massive impact with me and teachers everywhere?
Yeah, it's interesting. Even my parents struggle to describe to their friends what it is that their son does. And I think of my own son, he's 5 years of age, who sees daddy around the house a great deal, wondering, what does he do? Mm-hmm. So I describe myself as an experiential trainer. I am an author, and I spend a lot of time speaking on the keynote circuits and so forth around the world. But in practice, I work as a trainer, someone who is working professionally to develop the skills and facilitation skills, program skills of educators all over the world. They're often teachers. But they're sometimes camp leaders, corporate trainers, youth workers. But more than 50% of the people I'm working with are working within the school systems.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and obviously the work that you've done has had a direct impact into my own classroom experience and therefore flown into other avenues as well. But, I mean, you mentioned facilitation and, you know, games and activities to help people who facilitate. What is that? What is facilitation for people that maybe, you know, haven't really heard that term?
Yeah, it is a term that's probably interchangeable with other words, but I see it as the ability to guide a group towards a particular outcome.
Awesome.
It's not just necessarily a conversation. More often, the work that I'm doing is experiential. So people are fully utilizing their head, their heart, and their bodies in their work. So it could look from the outside like a series of activities or team building activities, even, you know, simple icebreakers. But it's providing a context for these human beings to connect with one another, so that the content that I'm going to deliver is far more powerful and far more rewarding. So that's the facilitation. That's my goal, is to facilitate that process, because most groups, when you just throw them together, think of a group of class kids, you know, first day, year seven or whatever, they don't have the requisite skills to be able to manage those relationships. And so as a teacher, it's one of the key goals, is to build those relationships among the students. And that requires a bit of investment of time and energy. But it pays huge dividends as the year continues throughout the curriculum.
Yeah. So, I mean, the big cornerstone of facilitation in the context that you work with is a lot of games and activities that drive those outcomes and so on with the students. And being mindful about what the game and activity is and what the result is that you're seeking for. Why would a phys ed teacher want to pursue investing time at the start of the year or the unit or class in the pursuit of things that they might deem as being outside of their curriculum area?
Yeah, and look, I think from a school administrator point of view, looking at a PE teacher playing games and not necessarily ticking any PE boxes would have a similar concern. For me, the lesson that I'm teaching through the workshops and also all the curriculum I'm designing is about using fun as the magnet to engage my students. Every teacher you work with, every follower of your podcast would say that student engagement is one of their biggest issues. If I could just engage my students, the rest of it would be easy. And so I'm using fun, which is really hard to stand away from. It's contagious, and it's difficult to look cool when everyone else is having a great time and you're just standing off to the side. So I'm using that through the media of these games and activities to engage my students. And before they know it, they've stepped outside their comfort zone to be doing something that at first glance they perhaps would not have entertained. And so that drives straight to the heart of the curriculum, because if I can just engage my students, invite them to give something a go, whether it's PE or any curriculum, then more likely they're going to actually learn something from that experience. And that's why it's so easy. And I've just so many case studies around the world of school administrators allowing more and more time to be invested in this, what I'm calling connection before content, early in the period, let's say the school term, because it pays bigger dividends further down the track, not only with engagement and the participation of the students, but importantly, managing, let's call it antisocial behaviors or difficult behaviors later on. The more time you spend up front, the less you have to do that later on.
Yeah, yeah. And these tools and these games can be the proxy to help bring out that connection before you even start moving into the content. And, you know, I interviewed Dr. Dean Dudley last year, and he spoke at Connected PE also. And he laid out this really good case for how you can advocate for your PE program. And often PE teachers advocate using one of the weaker arguments in the Rolodex of arguments that you can use, and that is that we get kids physically active, and being physically active translates into benefits. But if you actually look at the data and the research, there's a greater argument to be had for getting people to interact socially and create connections, and the benefits that it have actually outweigh the physical activity benefits. So.
Oh. Absolutely.
It's you know, we often say that, you know, the real reason we're getting them to do phys ed is to be moving and be active and so on, but that has about a 20% impact on you know, student populations. But the greater impact is on some of the other areas that phys ed is uniquely tailored to being able to provide, and that social interaction, and that's you know, getting kids, you know, connecting and so on, as you've mentioned. So I firmly believe that it's well and truly in our best interest to be looking and understanding at how these, you know, sort of situations play out. So a teacher who typically comes to your resources and so on, what might they be looking to do? Like, what sort of games and activities and sort of umbrella picture could they be able to roll out with you?
There's probably two or three key search terms that people are using, or is the connection to driving traffic to our resources. One of them is team building or problem solving. Mm-hmm. You know, the ability to build those social connections of working better together. So that again comes under the heading of wanting to build those relationships. But they're often looking for those sort of simple exercises, sometimes without props, often with very few or low props. I'll call it the icebreaker. I don't particularly like that term, but something that they might use to start their session, or a little brain break, you know, a couple of minute energizers. Mm-hmm. You know, just hundreds of those throughout our resources that people are frequently using, most of which do not need any equipment. So you can just pull them out of your back pocket at a moment's notice.
Yeah.
And this one is related to trust, particularly if you're involving the whole body, as a lot of PE does. You know, there is elements of physical, mental and emotional trust. And again, we all understand that the stronger that platform is, if you're using experiences to develop trust, the more likely your students are going to grow, you know, and develop and learn.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And these games and activities have a massive role to play in our PE Geek workshops, which many of our listeners have attended and been part of or heard of. And the reason we use them is because of that idea of connection before content, you know, using them at the start of the day to sort of break down those barriers that usually come with people coming together, and also as a proxy to refresh people, you know, throughout different stages of the session, and also as a way of shining light on some of the things that we're doing. So there's so many different avenues that they can take.
Yep. And to be fair, Jared, it does all of those things. And as I'm being instructed, because I'm not a PE teacher, I'm not a qualified educator sitting in a, you know, a state secondary college or something, these experiences are also ticking a lot of the curriculum framework boxes for Absolutely. Physical education. And I'm getting that feedback from the teachers going, "Mark, this was great. I just had to adapt this, and I could tick these three boxes in motor skills." It's like, Fantastic.
No, there,
so
there
it's not
is.
just about running around having fun.
Yeah, no, there's this underlying core element that these games and activities have, and anyone can plug and play them into any curriculum, you know, standards that they might like. And particularly, there's this huge push in phys ed to be addressing these cooperative skills and these team building skills. And, you know, it's Australia's been very progressive, and that's always been a very big part of the curriculums, but the rest of the planet, they're starting to either adopt it or it's, you know, now becoming a bit more common. And we're starting to see this huge resurgence with people calling cooperative learning in phys ed. And, you know, when I look at these activities that people are running and doing and advocating for, guess what they are? And guess where they sort of started? They started way back in that that early days, and, you know, where I sort of look to with your resource. And now it's just sort of starting in some places to get the attention that it deserves, and rightly so.
Yeah, and that's what's kept me so busy, particularly outside of Australia. I've spent probably 3 months of my life in the last couple of years in China, or, you know, alone. You know, the educational system there is rapidly engaging with this new curriculum, particularly the experiential curriculum, where you're teaching kids not only success in school, skills in that area, but also success in life skills. And these activities are brilliant for that because, as we've said, they engage the kids, they're fun, but they also develop, you know, communication, collaboration, creativity, critical thinking skills.
Absolutely. So you've built the online games database, playmeo.com. And, you know, I'm guessing that obviously in the years gone by, you had your books and resources as physical things, and you still have those now.
Yep.
What was the reasoning behind turning it into a website where you could target different languages and so on?
Yeah, I'd love to think that this was always the idea 20 years ago, Jared. It wasn't. I got that and really believed that you had to turn up at a training program or a training workshop I was delivering to get the content. That just seemed to make sense to me. And then realized that even if only Melbourne was my market, there was no way I could get to every school teacher or camp leader, corporate trainer just in Melbourne. And of course, you know, it's a world market now. So I thought, okay, start writing books. And so that was over 20 years ago, started writing books. That was a way of me turning up without me having to turn up. That was still really limiting and not leveraging the internet. And so the short story is I started a blog. When my third book, Count Me In, came out, the next question that people were asking was, when's your next book coming out? It's like, man, if you just knew how much effort there was in writing a book. So I started blogging. I just used the platform of a blog. This is over 7 or 8 years ago now. And every time I came across a new idea or a video that just seemed really cool, I would share it. And within the space of a year or two, 30,000 people a month were visiting this site. It was all completely free, but it was a blog. It was even hard for me to find something that I knew was buried in there somewhere but couldn't find. And then so five and a half years ago, I decided to create a database, actually taking these variety of experiences that are experiential, that are fun, help develop all of these skills so that people could find them. But importantly, be able to see what they look like, which is something that a book couldn't do, but I could do without me turning up. So hundreds and hundreds of video tutorials of real groups, kids and adults that I'm working with that have agreed to, happy to have someone video what this looks like, with all the variations, because, you know, I'm sure most of your listeners and followers would go, oh, yeah, I've seen that before. Well, here's three different ways of doing it. You know, they're always looking for something new. And then leadership tips, you know, the step-by-step instructions, you can download it all. So it was really just five and a half years ago decided that this was the thing. And the irony is that I wanted this so that I could sort of start to peg back my travel. You know, spending so much time out of the country. 5 years ago, our son arrived on the scene. So I was now a father for the first time in my life. And I was like, you know what? Wouldn't mind spending a bit more time at home. And the irony is, because more people are now seeing me online, I'm busier than ever. And so the database is a powerful way for me to be able to share. And like, what drives this in terms of my passion is my mentor, Carl Ronke, who was the founder of an organization called Project Adventure, where I did my initial training 30 years ago. He always had said to me, Mark, a good idea does not care who it belongs to. And that's what drives the database. It's like, you know, here are hundreds and hundreds of ideas that just work so well, particularly in your context, Jared, in physical education. knock yourself out.
Yeah,
So we're really committed to a lot of that being shared.
for sure. And I mean, they found a big place into my classroom practice and the workshops. And to be honest, this is how it sort of happened. You and I got on a call a couple of years ago, and we sketched out some games and activities that fit with the theme. And then we actually presented a session together at ACHPA, which was a lot of fun. And but I'm sitting here thinking about how I've used Playmio myself in my own teaching, and it looks very similar to how a person might discover it if they went to playmio.com. You get to the home screen, and essentially you're asked a question on, who you are. So I am a school teacher, and I want to do whatever that might be. So develop team skills, and you hit find activities, and then what? You're presented with a series of activities that are relevant to that particular search that you've created.
Yeah, there's several search indices that people can use, but it's taking what are several hundred, I think we're approaching 350 activities now, and then whittling it down, filtering it down to a particular purpose that you might enter into that space. And there's tons of stuff that's free. There's clearly a premium model involved here, but for those folks who just want to test it out, you'd have days and days of content before you'd ever have to look at something that was premium.
Yeah, so I've put in my search there. I said I'm a school teacher. I want to develop team skills, and I've come up with, quite a collection of games there. Obviously, Empowered Teams, Lumberjack Stack, Monarch Tag, Get 20. I mean, there's heaps of them. I think you've actually, for that one search, is 137 activities. So that's a lot of time you could dedicate to building team skills. Which I absolutely tick boxes in this, this curriculum that we all teach. So I'm a big fan, big advocate for the work that you're doing at Playmio.com, and you've prepared a little special coupon that for Peer Geek listeners. Do you mind just telling people how they can access that?
Yeah, so if they find that there's some value, Jared, in any of the free resources, and there's free downloads of audiobooks and ebooks, and of course there's all the activities with all the free videos. If that makes sense, then the coupon, which will give you 30% off any of the annual subscriptions, is PE Geek, six characters, PEGEEK, PE Geek. Use that at the checkout page, and it'll automatically deduct 30% off the subscription price.
Awesome. Thank you again for sharing that. And one last question before we go. Is there any mistakes that people tend to make when they facilitate it? I mean, I'm sure there's a common array of things that people do wrong or, that they should avoid. Or is there something that comes to mind, more so than others in that space?
Yeah, look, the first thing that came to mind, and I see it all the time. I wrote about it in my most recent book with Serious Fun. It was the top of the seven mistakes that teachers were making, and that was not breaking the ice. Again, I want to use that cliche term, but effectively asking their group too much too soon. I frequently hear the lament, "Oh, that won't work with my group." I've worked with so many different types of groups all around the world. And if you apply a really powerful sequential framework to the experiences that you're delivering, then it's really unusual for any experience not to work with a particular group. You might just take longer with certain groups than others. So for me, actually preparing your group, emotionally, physically, and mentally for an experience is one of the key mistakes. And it's one of the reasons why things don't work.
And that could, I mean, that has a direct connection with people trying to teach certain things to groups too soon and saying, well, this isn't going to work. So, I think that has a lot of play in so many different areas that teachers are involved in. And but you could stack these games and activities together to bring out the outcomes over a period of time. That's the idea, isn't it?
Absolutely. And we embed that almost a prescriptive model within many of the activities, suggesting, hey, you might like this activity, but here it is sitting inside a 30-minute lesson plan or a 2-hour lesson plan. So it gives you a few ideas of, oh, love the activity, but here's something you do before it to prepare them for it, and here's some things to do after it as well.
Yeah, I love it. Big fan. Head over to playmio.com and sign up for your free trial, and I definitely recommend going in there and getting the premium account because you'll be the best facilitator that you could possibly imagine. And it just, I always found that whenever I had a swag of games that I was going to be playing, I was more excited about the lesson as well. Do you find that too?
Oh, absolutely. And that's the feedback I get from the teachers and school systems I'm working with, is they're saying, yeah, I get that it's ticking all these other boxes, Mark, but I'm actually enjoying this. Like, I've been a teacher for 20 years or whatever. It's like, I'm actually refreshed.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, hallelujah. Yeah. Fantastic. I mean, it's great when it does that as well, because that, you know, gives you more reason for being in front of your group.
Awesome. Love it. Thank you again for stopping by, and I look forward to speaking with you soon.
Fantastic, Jared. All the best.
See ya.
Thank you.